What's going on? You are listening to the Frotcast, coming at you, not live, from our Frot quarters to yours. I'm Vince Mancini. I'm joined, as always, you know him, you love him, he is the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb.
Where have all the buttholes gone? Come and lum lum, everyone. When will you ever learn? When will you ever learn? What's up? I didn't have anything for learn.
I thought you could have gone with lum for learn. It's close.
Yeah,
enough.
It doesn't rhyme though. It's just they both start with L. See, this is why.
I think you're taking it.
Why don't you leave it to me, Vince? Why don't you leave it to me? Mm. Why don't you leave the big ideas to your old pal Matt Lieb?
Yeah.
Why don't you leave it to me?
Leave it, love it, or leave it.
Hey, that's fun.
Love
Who else
it
is here?
Or leave it.
Yeah. Also joining us is, you know him, you love him, Vince Mancini.
Oh, I thought you were introducing the other people. That's
no,
my
I
job.
Wasn't, because it's your yeah. job. I was just trying
right.
to spurn you to not
no,
spurn.
You've got a problem.
Now you've got a problem.
Where are my sunglasses?
Also joining us, future NFL Hall of Famer, actual human giant, Brendan.
Hi, I'm an irredeemable asshole, and you're not.
Hey.
It's true.
That's Chevy Chase. Also joining us, fourth Mike. We got four of them again. You know, people
right.
say four mics in this economy. And we
yeah.
say, yeah. Coming to us 5 years after we all got together at the U.S. Capitol, you might know him as Pod Yourself producer Brent Flyberg.
Hey, what's up, what the frauders, what the fraudigans, what the frauda frackers?
Lock the gate!
Frot the gate!
Frot the
Good
gate!
Good to be back on the frot.
I wonder how he's doing that, Mark Maron.
Mm. He's good. He's on some shows. He's a surprisingly good actor, I will say.
Oh, I didn't know that. What show is he on?
He was on Glow. He's on Stick on Apple TV, which I watched
Glow
three
Stick?
Quarters of an episode. No, it's about a golfer.
Glow Stick.
Owen Wilson.
Do you see what I'm doing? I'm
Glow.
I'm mashing both of his fucking.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you leave it to me, Vince?
Glow Stick.
Why don't you leave it
I see.
To me? Brent, are you frozen or are you just hanging out?
I think I was frozen for a second.
Okay, six.
It says my internet connection is unstable.
Oh, that's good.
Man.
Oh, sounds
what
like
what is
my...
it, a woman?
Yeah, there we go.
Oh.
Shit, maybe I should leave it to you.
I think your internet has borderline personality disorder.
Oh,
dang.
Yeah.
That means it's wild in the sack.
Oh.
That's right.
Yeah, what you want is an internet who doesn't have a good father.
Yeah, yeah. Low self-esteem internet. Mm. Easier to fuck or something. We all saw Begonia except for Brent.
It's true.
Thank you. We saw Begonia.
I didn't see Begonia, but I did see Anaconda, so I am going to do my best to relate everything that you guys say about Begonia to the movie Anaconda. I'm also going to turn off my video.
Yeah,
see if that helps.
Let's see if that helps.
Big yeah. Anaconda vibes.
Yeah,
this movie. That's what he said when he saw Begonia.
Yeah, exactly. Like Boss Baby.
Brent, did you? I've heard tell that Anaconda is actually a sequel. Which I saw the movie and I had no idea about this.
It's yes, it is kind of a sequel. It is like. Yeah, I don't even know. It's almost like a reboot. I don't know. Because the movie Anaconda exists in this universe. They go to make a sequel to Anaconda, and it turns out
as
that
in
they
the Ice Cube
living.
Jennifer Lopez one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then it
sounds
turns
more
out
like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Listen,
but,
it would be better
but
if
that
it was
seems
Tropic
rude.
Thunder.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't hate that premise that, what if we made a comedy about the making of a sequel to Anaconda? I do a little bit wonder why they didn't call it Anaconda 2, which is a, but whatever. That's neither here nor there.
I think they already made a Anaconda 2 that was like some sort of direct to DVD situation.
That makes sense. I could see that. Yeah.
But anyway.
Anacondos.
I heard it was, this is apparently not true because I Googled it, but people were saying it was a sequel to Strange Wilderness. Cause I forget why they were saying that, but they said that, and, not true. Apparently I'd search for it. Google does not work very well anymore. I don't know if you guys have noticed this.
I like it now.
It's completely broke. I was trying to use it for work, and it was just like, I was having like almost like a Reddit moment where I'm like, what kind of pool sweep is this? Because one of my customers uses this bullshit ass Alibaba pool sweep. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what kind of pool sweep is this? And it's like, this is a Polaris 280. And I'm like, it's not a fucking Polaris 280.
It's off brand. I like that. Yeah.
Google,
no,
I know Polaris 280. Some of my best friends are Polaris 280.
this was no Polaris 280.
That's not a Polaris 280. Crocodile Dundee. Why don't you leave it to me, Vince? Just take a break. Take a breather. Let old Matt handle the jokes, because I'm crushing it. Yeah, no, I like Google now. Google's better now, because you can just ask AI.
You can just ask questions and get wrong answers. It's so nice. It cuts out the middleman.
I don't see how it's
mistakes.
Wrong. If it tells you that, that's the answer. I see everyone else is wrong.
Mm.
You ever think about that? Like, we're living in a world where people are like, oh, the AI is hallucinating. Maybe humanity's hallucinating. Mm. All right. Maybe the Red Wedding did happen in Downton Abbey. Maybe you're wrong and the supercomputer might know a thing or two. I'm just saying. Just putting it out there. I just feel like if we lived in a world where we allowed the quote hallucinations of AI to be the new reality.
Yeah.
I think we live in a pretty sick world.
Yeah, we should just let the AI cook.
Let it cook.
I mean, I feel like we're not that far away. I mean, how often do you see someone's like, well, Grok says that, you know.
Dude, I had someone I had someone online who was mad at me.
They put you in a bikini. Did Grok say
no?
Grok,
no.
What if Matt was actually an underage girl in a bikini?
I am gonna do that.
No, there was
I'm not gonna. He's gonna be at least 18. But I'm gonna see if Grok can put Matt in a bikini.
Yeah, yeah. Can you make a non-child porn version of Matt in bikini, please? Nope, Grok, stop. I love that Grok is like, come on, can I make him underage?
And then I get arrested for it. And I'm like, no, I made Grok in the picture. He's holding up an ID that says he's 18.
I'm allowed to come to this.
Did you see someone made Grok apologize in the voice of Jar Jar Binks?
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's awful.
This guy got really mad at me. Let me just say, and so I forget what. I don't even know what we were. He, I don't know. He is called the Zoran Socialism Tracker, and it's like, you know, cool. It's like some random anti Zoran account, and he made fun of me for something, and I called him the least successful Zoran hater account, which is a pretty big insult. And then he went on to say, let's meet up and you can say this to me in person like a man, or I'll just drop by one of your comedy shows and give you the chance to say it with your fucking chest. And I just wrote, you gonna cry? And he went on to ask Grok, what kind of person says, are you going to cry, to prove to me that I was a bully? I was like, did you just threaten me? How are you both?
This is the everything is Gamergate now. This is the aspect of it that we don't talk about, which is like, remember, it all started, if you recall, with being like, well, they're pro-bullying because they're being mean to me online.
Right. That's right.
You're running ads on this guy's website. Your Mercedes-Benz is promoting bullying. And then they just hadn't encountered people this stupid and craven and bad faith before. So Mercedes, like, of course, has like a crack team of PR crisis response people who are like, we cannot be seen as supporting bullying.
Right.
Which is just the funniest fucking thing. Imagine, like, Look, as a company, we believe in just a few core tenets. One, a quality product at a fair price. Two, the customer's always right. And three, bullying fucking rocks.
Yeah. I just love the idea of someone like at a CVS picking up like a fucking tube of Colgate and being somebody like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's the bully toothpaste.
I mean, I do like it is very just representative of the fact that like cry bullying has become the dominant mode.
Totally. It's normal.
Like in all facets of society where someone like tells you to kill yourself. And if you respond, they're like, look, check out this guy being mean to me, everyone. You believe this?
It's so weird.
Some guy with his government name and picture and employer like in his bio. And you're like, look at this fucking guy. And they're like, I can't believe you'd stoop so low.
You're doxing me.
You're doxing me.
Yeah, I love it too because he like he screenshotted the whole explanation. Grok says, it is rarely a supportive gesture, contrasting with empathetic responses like, it's okay to be sad or I'm here with you. Why someone
you should have said it's okay to be sad.
Shut up. And then
if we now, can meet in Temecula to talk about it.
And then it has a bulleted list why someone might say it. One, bullying/teasing to demean someone, showing vulnerability as seen in playground dynamics. Two, invalidation. Just tell someone their feelings aren't valid or that they're overreacting. Three, power play to gain control. Four, lack of empathy. Five, personal insecurity. Context is key. In a fight, it's usually an attack to escalate or shut down the other person. I'm just like, bro.
Sounds like you and that guy were exchanging power play.
I mean, it seems like we definitely were in some sort of lack of empathy and validation cycle. I don't know.
I don't think, you know, personally, Matt, I don't think you did the work. I don't think you listened.
I didn't.
And I think, you know, you failed to understand your privilege and the intersectionality of your place as a media figure, and the power that your words can have.
That's your platform gives you responsibility.
That's so true. I honestly,
and if you're not speaking out, like, you might as well be silent.
Yeah, silence is violence, and violence causes cry-lence.
Cleanliness is godliness. God is empty, just like you. So we all
saw Begonia.
We've invaded Venezuela since that we last potted. That happened.
We invaded Begonia. I feel like we should talk about Begonia for a little.
Yeah, in case Brendan has to leave. Yeah, it works.
Excuse me. So that was a Yorgos movie.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yorgos, fuck yourself.
Or is it Lanthimos? I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Greeks, weigh in the comments.
Can I be vulnerable for a moment? Admit that not only have I not seen Begonia, I've yet to see a Yorgos movie.
Oh, shit.
I've never seen any of them. And I think on paper, they all sound like something I'd like. I don't know how I keep missing them.
My take is that I like the ones that he did. I like the ones he did with Tony McNamara. Which ones are those? I realize, like, I'm not sure if I like
My
Yorgos
Big Fat
or
Greek
just,
Wedding,
like,
I think.
Yeah, I did My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He did Poor Things and The Favorite with Tony McNamara.
Yeah, The Favorite is dope as shit.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite of his.
Did that win Best Picture?
I think so. I definitely won Best Actress for Olivia Colman.
This is not a plain movie.
It's not a plain movie?
Dogtooth, which is a wild movie.
I haven't seen Dogtooth. I don't know Dogtooth.
Well, what did you guys think of this one, Begonia, since we all saw it?
I enjoyed it for most of the way through. I think because it was Yorgos, I knew the ending already. Like, you don't have to, if you've know his movies, you're like, well, why would he do it if he didn't make the ending yet?
Wow, you're just gonna spoil it up at the top. All right.
Okay. Good point.
I thought you were gonna go somewhere else with that. I thought you were gonna be like dance around it or be coy.
Okay. Nope. Well, maybe what we'll bleep that
Matt
out.
Matt Lieb is not coy. He's going in dry.
Folks. I feel
we'll
bad.
We'll put in the show notes where the major spoiler is.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Timestamp.
And also, you know, yeah, I'm not writing down the time just in case we want to bleep it. But the ending of it for me was predictable because it's Yorgos and because I know what he does. And I like his sense of humor is pretty in line with mine. So I would have also found this funny. But I think because of that, there was a little bit of me that found it getting kind of tedious towards the third act. So yeah, I don't know. It was still good though. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought the actors, the acting in it was so good.
Yeah.
I just really was able to kind of like lay back and enjoy myself.
I'll let Brendan have it because I already wrote a review. So I'll let, Brendan weigh in here.
I really liked portraying Jesse P. Lemon's like just sad life. I thought that was just a very vivid picture and done in such a good subtle way that wasn't too over the top. And yeah, just like the whole kind of environment that he built, I just thought was really good. And
yeah,
I was for most of the movie like, okay, like what's happening here? Because the main plot point of the movie is that Jesse P. Lemons and his neuroatypical cousin are plotting to kidnap the CEO of a biotech company because they believe her to be an alien who is conducting.
She's basically Sheryl Sandberg. She's very Sheryl Sandberg coded, let's say.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, and I think it's also hard to get away from the she is Sheryl Sandberg coded, but it's hard to get away from the Amazon analog because there is sort of an interesting reveal where you see her. She's this high profile CEO. And then you see these other guys and they just kind of seem like schlubs. And then it's not until so they kidnap her because they believe that she is an extraterrestrial who is
an Andromedan
harming humankind. Yeah. From the Andromeda galaxy. And only then is it revealed that he works at the company, but he works in shipping. So he's scanning boxes all day, essentially.
Yeah.
And they have the vest.
That's what I'm doing
on,
all day.
Which to me was very. Now I wish I had said scanning packages.
Yeah, I would have done that too.
So to me, that was very Amazon coded.
Yeah. No, it was. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
But it is. I do agree that as the plot unfolds, it can't be, a global e-commerce hegemon. It's got to be like a biotech company.
Right. Yeah. And so that for me, that was like, okay, we've got a little bit of like, it's a, there's a few different CEOs.
She's a
here.
Girl boss. I mean, I
and
feel
I guess,
like,
yeah, it doesn't really
it doesn't,
matter.
It doesn't really
right?
matter. Like, she's a girl boss at a,
it doesn't really matter. It does kind of have to come back to where it's got to be some sort of life science,
right.
Because of the way the plot goes. But anyway, I don't know. I lost my train of thought.
Right,
anyway,
I thought
that was good.
Yeah. I have a few thoughts here. Like I also think it's good overall. I liked it. I think it's best in its portrayal of the Sheryl Sandberg character where she's doing the thing where she's trying to tell people that now that she's boss, they can go home at 5:30, but only if they're not on a deadline. And only, obviously we don't want to miss it. Like she keeps qualifying it. And so like her whole thing as a boss is sort of projecting this like appearance of professionalism, but like she doesn't actually make any decisions that she's kind of like bad at it. I thought it was a good portrayal of like a tech boss.
Right. Someone who wants to appear empathetic. And
yeah, I thought one, and I was actually, we were going to try to segue this and we got sidetracked, but like using the empathy speak and, there is when she first wakes up from being sedated and kidnapped, there's a great scene that was like, it gave me like PTSD flashbacks of some just evil fucking person who's like, I really want to sit with you and listen to what you have to say and hear what you're saying, In reaction to me telling you that you don't have a job anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's doing like salesman tricks in response to being kidnapped by two dumbasses who think she's an alien, which is pretty great. I think for me, so Matt, I sort of agree with some of the things you said. Like, I mean, the way it plays out is they kidnap her. She's in the basement. They're trying to figure out what to do with her. I mean, you can either tell that as she is the thing that they say she is or she's not. Like, he went one direction, and I think it was like a funny direction, and it, like, it's the way that I would have, it's the way that I would have gone also. And mm-hmm. And I think that last shot where it's revealed is probably the best of the movie. I just felt like it should have come 20 minutes earlier. Like, 100%. I kind of wish they would have done that earlier and then like developed it from there, because that's like funny and interesting. And then my other thing is, like, in watching this, I did start to wonder if I was actually like a Yorgos fan or if it was Tony McNamara, because Tony McNamara like is Australian and he has a very like scat sense of humor. And I think if you watch like The Favourite or Poor Things, it's like it has like Yorgos's like galaxy brain, like artsy weirdness. But then it's also like dick, pussy and cock is what this is really about.
Sure.
And people
sure,
are going to
sure.
fart and this is going to be some shit jokes. And I like that. I like that mix. Like, to me, that's like my favorite Yorgos. The other thing that I was thinking while I was watching this is that I feel like this movie, number one, I feel like it suffers from having come out the same year as Eddington.
Because yes,
I think
yes.
they're both sort of about the fracturing of consensus reality.
Uh-huh, and uh-huh.
I tend to think that Eddington is better at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also have this thing where I feel like a lot of foreign-born directors suffer a bit when they do movies set in the U.S. because I don't think they recognize quite the varied tapestry of specific American psychoses that
yes.
we have. And
yes.
I think like if you watch... I mean, there's problems with Eddington. I understand why people don't like it, where it feels like it's saying, oh, both sides are kind of bad. But I think like Ari Aster like is enough of an American to recognize all these different flavors of psychotic, like
right,
American
yeah.
psychosis.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And I think that like Yorgos doesn't quite have that. Like, I don't think... Like he's like, he has some of it, but I don't know. It's
well,
like...
Well, he usually doesn't have any cause to... display it in this movie. He does because
yes.
of the
his other movies that
plot.
Are fantastical work perfectly, because like, you know, Poor Things is like set in like whatever alternate 1890 or whatever, and
right.
The Favorite is set in I don't know whatever
back
1700s
in the day.
Or whatever
back
I mean
in
those
olden
were
times.
Great, like all his movies are sort of fantasy settings other
right.
than this one. And like, I think that shows up, like we're talking about, like, is she a biotech CEO? Is she like an Amazon CEO? Like, I don't think it has to be specific necessarily, but I don't know. I think maybe it would have worked better if it was specific. And there's some, like, it sort of, it elides certain, it blurs certain details that I think might've been funnier if it was more specific about. And overall, I just felt like it was great, but it sort of drags on as a result of being in the basement for like so long. And I kind of wish that ending came sooner and then went from there a little bit.
For sure. I mean, with all those problems in mind, and you're right, Vince, I didn't think about how, you know, that not having sort of having a muddled understanding of like different geographic American psychopaths, I guess.
like I think he did a really good job portraying her in that tech company, but I feel like if like Brendan wrote it, he would have like such a very like someone who's actually worked in that shitty company.
Totally,
like
totally.
It would be a little bit different.
No, for sure. I hadn't considered that it's you know, because he's an immigrant and
yeah.
Well, we
which
know
I'm saying is you should never see a movie written
made
by
an immigrant. I agree, yeah. And I'm glad
I have a color gradient chart, and if they're like past a certain uh-huh. level of swarthiness, I'm like, nope, not
100%. I don't even think Irish or white. But but like
that's like the other direction. If it's too pink, yeah, they're not white either.
Exactly. But I will say there are just some really great parts of this that, you know, this wasn't written by, you know, whatever McNamara. I don't know this guy, but Stavros's like entire storyline is so funny.
Yes,
it's he plays the cop who molested him,
but who is nice.
What a stroke of genius!
Like to me,
and using Staub for it. Like, yes. Oh my god,
it is like such a funny and it's like it exists.
And plus, like the promotional hook of getting to see like Staub on the red carpet with like Emma Stone 100%. And Jesse Plemons. So amazing.
Yeah, they got tens of thousands of more viewers.
Yeah,
like podcast schlubs who are just like, "Oh, my favorite guy is in a thing." I thought his storyline was great.
I hope Adam's in it and they kick his ass.
Yeah, fucking idiot. I hope Nick shows up and does a Chinese accent. But like his storyline was great, and he was great.
Hey, wait,
we're not ready, Matt, to
segue to the Chevy Chase documentary yet.
Oh yeah, that's right. We'll get to Chinese accents later. His storyline was great, so I was like, you know, that has to be shouted out. And also, the guy who plays Jesse P. Lemon's like autistic, like younger brother or cousin, mm-hmm.
cousin,
is so fucking. It's such a great character that I it like. He kind of carried the movie for me, to be honest. Just because,
in fact, you texted me. You said we should find a guy like that and chemically castrate him.
Yeah. I was like, does this movie stay this good? Because I just watched him get chemically castrated, and I'm really enjoying it. No, but like, his performance is really good. He's actually autistic.
Yes,
right?
He is. Yeah.
Because I was like. This is so good. Because if he's
and
not
an actor, they didn't just like trick him into it.
No, obviously. But I was thinking to myself, I was like, this is either an autistic actor or somebody who, if he's not autistic, he needs to start a podcast with Stavros, because this is like Nick Mullen levels of good at doing problematic voices. But like he was great, his character was great. He was the only normal person in the movie, so you really are like clinging on to you kind of feel for him more than anyone. And and yeah, in a movie that's this kind of
which is why he
silly,
wins in the end.
Sure. but it is, I don't know, it's just like there's just a lot of great actors in this, and the plot I think is really rich. It kind of starts becoming tedious, and
I think I wish there was more like button lines, and I think that's where the McNamara thing would have helped, because I think like there's so many like conceptually funny things that don't quite have a punchline, whereas like McNamara I feel like is just constantly writing banger punchlines. I feel like I was trying to come up with like a Venn diagram joke about like movies where it seems like the screenwriter had just read a long thing about bees, and it was like this one and this Jason Statham one and then like movies about like the fracturing of consensus reality starring Emma Stone, where it's like, you know, this one and Eddington. But we'll workshop that. Well, maybe I'll ask Grok to see if they
Beekeeper 2 is Jason Statham is the only human spoilers. Jason Statham is the only human who survived.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Yeah, because he was and he knew about bees.
Yeah, and he's just gonna have to fight the bears that are trying to get into the beehives.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys notice that Jesse P. Lemon's mom was Alicia Silverstone?
Yeah, I did. That was interesting. I don't know why she was in the movie or why that scene.
Well,
because
she's an actress.
But I like to see her.
Because she's an actress.
Okay.
That's why she's in movies.
Yeah,
Vince, why don't you let handle
it? Justin,
that part was weird. There was like the scene with Alicia Silverstone in the bathtub. I thought was weird, and I'm not totally sure what to make of it, because in typical Yorgos style, there's some sort of dreamy, you know, magical realism type stuff, and she's like in a hospital bed, but then she starts floating away, and he's tethered to her. But then before that, he had like stuck a bunch of huge needles in her in a bath. Mm. And the thing that was weird to me is I'm like, is this some symbolic thing?
Is this about
thing?
Matt's mom?
Or... I was like, is this some symbolic thing, or are they doing some like internet pilled bloodletting?
Mm.
Like yeah. peasant brained, like, is this a commentary on like American peasant brain? Like, you have too much blood.
Yeah. Yeah. Your humors are out of whack because of too much blood. I think you need a enema, like a whiskey enema.
Yeah. I my assumption was that it's just, you know, doing metaphor stuff, but also given the love like those. Sort of twistiness of the ending, maybe not, like, you know, I don't think it matters. It only matters insofar as you're the very on the nose symbolism of, yes, he has learned, he's tethered to his mom, he's learned about aliens and believes this fucking magical shit because his mom was a drug addict and online pilled, you know. Yeah. Weirdo.
I was talking to Justin Halpern before we came on. He really liked this movie too. We were sort of arguing about it back and forth. And then he texted me, one time I was at the Golden Globes in line for a drink, and I was behind Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst, and I hear him whisper to her, "This thing is so fucking dumb. Do you think anyone will give a shit if we leave?" And she goes, "No, we're not that important." And he goes, "Thank God, let's get the fuck out of here." And they left.
They're so cool. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
You gotta give them that.
That is really awesome. I love Jesse Plemons. He really is like quickly become one of my favorite actors to watch, just because like if he's in anything, I just know he's going to, I'm not going to be able to stop looking at him.
He's,
you know?
Always good. He's always good, and in such a wide variety of characters,
yes,
and roles, you know.
Yeah, like he can play fat Matt Damon, or he can play meth adult Matt Damon.
Yeah,
like he did
it's
in this
crazy
one.
He really does have so much of a wider range than Matt Damon that I'm like, it kind of sucks that we mostly know him as like fat Matt Damon, skinny Matt Damon. You know?
Or the Matt Damon who fucks Kirsten Dunst.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, you know, it's that's right, because they did that movie together.
No, they're like married and whatnot.
Oh, they're married?
Yeah. And they did Fargo.
Fargo. They did a season of Fargo together.
Didn't they? What was the
Fargo
movie?
Fargo, I guess, is the, that's the show that makes everyone have sex, apparently. Because
who else
remember,
had sex?
What's her name? The
I
actress.
Heard Chris Rock had sex once.
Ugh. He got slapped right afterwards.
Yeah, can you imagine fucking Chris Rock? I don't think that's.
No, there was the actress that was in.
You're making me come. You know it feels good when I come.
Ooh. There's two kinds of ways of having sex.
I'm pushing sperm out my dick. Paul Giamatti. I feel like
I've never heard Chris Rock say Paul Giamatti,
it's
but
only,
I think he would do it just
I,
like
I can't really do a good impression of him. I'm realizing as I'm trying, but if I say Paul Giamatti, it's the only time that it does sound kind of like him, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was that actress who was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and then she did a season of Fargo with Ewan
Elizabeth
McGregor.
Winstead, right?
Yeah,
Winstead. Yeah, and then she left her husband for Ewan McGregor during the show.
What?
Yeah.
Man, she's so pretty.
And her husband was Riley Stearns, who I have interviewed and posted the interview on the Frotcast before. So, therefore...
we made
I don't know
them
but,
break up
you now you know
or something. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just, you know, I really enjoyed most of it, and it's, I do think it suffers from it coming out in the same year as Eddington, because they both really are doing sort of the thing that although I will say with Eddington I was more surprised. With this movie, I was not shocked at all, because it was, you know, it's because of the director. I was just like, I know where this is going.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting.
I also think the punch. I mean, I there was a lot of funny moments in this. I do think Eddington's punchlines are a little better than Begonia's, though. You know, I laughed a lot during this, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, well, solid B plus of a movie.
So, can I just talk about the ending?
Yeah.
Spoiler corner. Yeah, I'm a little torn on the ending because I just loved, I thought they did such a good job of, and this is, again, this is a really big compliment to Jesse Plemons, like playing the conspiracy addled dope, who's just like, too dumb to understand what's plausible and what's not,
right?
And it's kind of like the thing that kept going through my head is like the old saying about have an open mind but make sure it's not so open that everything falls out,
right?
And you know that he's like a perfect distillation of that, and he just does such a great job portraying it. And I think I loved the scenes between him and Emma Stone where she's just like trying to be like, you're clearly wrong. Like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm not an alien, you know? And
right.
He's just getting so mad because he can't even really articulate an argument because he's never articulated an argument. He's just right. ingested all this one-way information.
Right. Yeah. He's only ever bounced it off of his autistic cousin who's just like, yeah. Are you sure?
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
So I loved the way they portrayed all that. And in fact, I actually thought I was expecting Eddington to go a little further, and they didn't. And it, I didn't dislike Eddington, but I remember at one point being like, oh, I kind of wish that they'd like really leaned more in that direction. Regardless, I loved Eddington. So that's not a put down on Eddington, but then,
not enough Joaquin Phoenix hanging dong in this one, I say.
That's also true.
Yeah.
But then we also watched Weapons around the same time as we talked about Eddington.
Mm.
And I was so excited. I liked Weapons. So again, yeah. I'm not like crapping on it, but I got so excited when Josh Brolin's character was like rewinding the videos over and over again and like focusing in on pixels, because that's just such a hallmark of the insanely like internet conspiracy brained person. Like you've seen this, you've likely seen this in the guise of you know, someone uploading a grainy photo and then like having like just going insane with MS Paint on it.
What they're doing is they're trying to apply auteur theory to reality. So they'll be like, why would God put this tree right here? Unless it was like him telling me a message about, you know, Jesse coming back in season 6.
Yeah. Are we supposed to expect that this isn't about lore?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I really liked that it did kind of go down that angle of just like some guy who the second anything he has to say comes in contact with like a rational person, it's just like, he's getting mad because he knows he sounds fucking crazy.
It's like when you have to explain a dream. The dream made sense because you never had to like explain it to another person. Like your brain already filled in all those gaps. And then you try to articulate it and you're like, oh, this makes no fucking sense at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, and that was what I really liked about it. And so then the fact that, again, spoiler alert, at the end, it turns out that he is 100% right.
Right.
On one hand, like that's really funny.
It's that really he would be funny. Accidentally right, you know, this crazy guy. Yeah.
It's very funny. But, and then also like the way that they film her like returning to the ship and they're wearing these goofy outfits is just very funny. Very delightful.
Yes.
I like that. There is a part of me though that I just can't quite get past like really being uncomfortable with the idea that like, this guy is like giving credence.
No, I think what it is, I mean, I see what you're saying. I think what it is, it's like, it's a really funny punchline, but I don't think it develops the story necessarily. Yes. Like it's a really good button. It's like, that was cool. Wouldn't it be cool if this happened?
Yes.
And it is, but then it sort of doesn't necessarily like improve the story that it's coming.
Well,
in.
And I guess now that you say that, and I guess like, that was kind of the last straw, right? Wasn't that sort of the last straw where she's like, yeah, they're irredeemable. We got to fucking...
Right.
We got to wipe them out. And then also, I guess, like, it's also funny that he was not... he didn't live to see any of the validation and, in fact, got pretty much humiliated, even though, again, he didn't live to see that, by just, like, his dumb homemade bomb just goes off.
Yeah, I mean, it's also... It's also like, yeah, I mean, that was wonderful. I feel like it's also like doing a riff on like the classic superhero trope where it's like Superman comes down to earth. I guess it's more like a Judeo-Christian thing where it's like Jesus comes down to earth and God's like, man, these people are irredeemable. I got to wipe them out. And Jesus is like, no, they got some good stuff. Like, maybe you should rethink that. And then like Superman kind of does the same thing with like, you know, the he's from whatever Krypton and all the other ones are like, these people are like sub Kryptonian trash and, you know, we should wipe this planet out. And he's like, no, no, they taught me about love. And so they're redeemable. Whereas this one's like reversing that trope where it's like, yeah, she came down and she saw everything that humanity had to offer. And she's like, yeah, these people, yes, let's wipe them out.
Yeah. I, like, now that we're talking about the ending and spoiling it, the funniest part of that is when she says they're irredeemable and it's, you know, it's time to like let it go, and then she goes over and the flat earth is there.
yes, that was the whole aspect. No, and they were showing that because remember it cut to the space view every time it was counting down the timeline before the eclipse.
Yeah.
And it slowly, as you saw, it got more and more flat over time until at the very end. Yeah, she's looking at the flat. That was amazing.
Oh, I didn't even notice that they were doing that as it went on. But that's even better.
And I was dissing it for not having as good of punchlines as Eddington, which I think is generally true. But in that instance, I think their version where like the flat earth is real and the Andromedans are real is a little funnier than Eddington's like, oh, what if like the Antifa super soldiers were real?
I hear you, Vince. I think I just have to disagree with you on a very personal level because I just have such a soft spot. Like, some of my favorite memories on the internet were reading the responses to whoever that was. It was just some really dumb shit poster who was like, on this date, the Antifa super soldiers are going to invade the US. And like the responses were so good. And they just had so much storytelling happening within a tweet, which was like, if anyone tries to come on my 150 acres, they are. I have over 1,000 guns waiting for them. Like, it was just some of my favorite times on all the internet. But I do think your claim is valid, Vince.
Yeah. Fair. I also think yours is valid. I think we're all valid. And that's why we fraught together, touching penises. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Is it?
It is.
Well, it may be a new year, but that doesn't mean there needs to be a new you. Maybe all the old you needs is to be a little bit less burdened. Therapy can help with that.
That's right. Therapy can help you more easily identify what weighs you down by offering an unbiased perspective to better understand your relationships, motivations, and emotions.
One of my biggest burdens is not being able to make some me time due to my hectic family life. And boy, wouldn't it be nice to have enough me time to spend with a therapist?
Well, guess what, Matt?
What?
At BetterHelp, you can find quality therapists. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S.
BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and our 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means we typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from our tailored recs.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews.
BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist.
Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
What's in the news, guys?
Before we move on from Begonia, I do want to point out there are some parallels to the 2025 film Anaconda.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, you mentioned very Amazon-coded. Anaconda, of course, takes place on the Amazon. So you could say Amazon-coded in a way.
True.
It's an allegory. Also,
yeah, it's an allegory for the globalization of e-commerce.
The way one large organism can quickly rise to the role of apex predator and slowly strangle the life out of smaller organisms around it.
Yes, exactly. Damn. And innovation.
Damn.
So sort of a meta commentary on the IP recycling in a way. Wow. But also, I was also just thinking that Jack Black is to like very earnest guys who listen to the Foo Fighters as Stavi is to like internet pilled guys, right. You know?
Yes. Yeah. That's yeah, true.
They're like, that's my friend.
I think.
Yeah. All right, those are all the.
If he met me, he'd like me.
I think Foo Fighters. Yeah. I think Foo Fighters is a really good call because I love Nirvana. I don't like the Foo Fighters.
Neither Same. Do I.
They're mm-hmm. the most boring band in the world.
But I don't hate the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, exactly. They're not. Sure. They're not. Yeah.
I don't hate McDonald's
hate.
Either.
Right. Right.
Yeah, they're just like they're not. It's not like being like, oh, Nickelback. Oh,
no, they're like, genetically Black engineered. Eyed Peas. They're genetically engineered to have to exist in homeostasis
yeah,
with
like just
everything.
Just extremely inoffensive music.
Yes,
it sounds enough like the sort of rock and roll that people are used to associating with some sort of, you know, roughly counterculture movement.
It's,
but like nothing about it is any of that.
It's also a, it makes me sad
group
because like
disguised as music.
Yeah.
It's
also like
it's
to me
shaped.
To me, yeah. Dave Grohl is like one of the best drummers in the world, and it makes me sad that he has a band where he doesn't play yeah. drums. Because I fucking love listening to Dave Grohl play drums.
Yeah. Remember when Jack White was it the Weathermen when Jack White's like, hey, I'm gonna play drums now. It's like, okay, why?
Because he really hated his ex-wife.
Yeah.
Never hear
he's
much
back
about
there going, this is what Meg looks
oh,
like.
Oh, hi,
now.
I'm Meg. Shut up.
See me do my Meg impression.
Oh, man. I love Danaconda, the OG. Like, my brother and sister still make fun of me because I went through sort of a snake phase after that. where I was, like, learning a lot about snakes. And then every time for a while they'd be like, oh, I'm Matt, I'm an anacondaologist, and then like,
solid burn.
Oh, they fucking got you, dude.
Oh god, yeah, they to this day they still say that shit.
I had an older cousin where I used to like idolize and sort of like just say things that he said that I didn't even understand, but I thought it would, you know, like he was cooler and older than me. So, and I remember one of the things that he said that I parroted was you know, people say dogs are man's best friend, but I actually think snakes are man's best friend. And I remember saying that, and now that I'm old enough, I have no idea what the fuck he was talking about.
That sounds like a fucking Jack Handy bit.
It does. That's a deep thought.
It really is. Yeah, just no elaboration.
But now that I think yeah. about it. I love cool older cousins where you just like they say something so stupid, but you're young, so you go, fuck yeah.
This motherfucker's spitting.
This motherfucker's spitting. Oh, man.
I pretty much am the oldest cousin, so I wonder like what kind of dumb shit my cousins picked up from me.
Oh, yeah. You probably said some wild shit.
Yeah,
or maybe
some crazy Metallica takes.
Yeah, or all the molestations.
I feel like there's a lot of bad trends in children's.
No,
movies.
No, sorry, I kind of brushed past that joke, and I would like to emphatically deny molesting my cousins. And in fact, I would like to go on record as me. I don't know about you guys, but me as a podcast host, I actually podcast on an anti. incestual molestation platform.
We're officially against that.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, you know, I haven't heard
what kind of person that. Molests their cousin.
That's all I'm saying is I haven't heard you guys say that. I mean, I have. You
I think
haven't.
It's partly because little kids just aren't as hot as we were when we were kids.
True. I molested my cousins.
Okay, there we go.
All of my cousins. So, all of my cousins are 20 years older than me. Yeah. So yeah, I molested them. You heard that, Larry? How'd you like it? How'd you like it? Having your mouth around this dick.
Call in.
Call in.
That'd be funny if you thought you molested him when you were like 8, because you're like, he sucked my dick.
I was just really manipulative.
He was molesting
back
me.
Then.
Why was he sucking my dick?
Talking to an old man, you're just a slightly less older man. He goes, I was just really manipulative back in those days. I could pretty much get any of my uncles to suck my dick.
I was really selfish. I was only thinking about myself. I could get my dick sucked.
I could just go to.
I was out to get mine.
I could go up to any uncle, any cousin, get them to suck my dick, and I felt bad because I was like, "Damn, I'm sort of grooming them." I love that. That's how someone internalized it. I was such a Mac back then. I could get every cousin to suck my dick.
I was Mr. Steal
Your
Uncle.
Every church, every church I went to,
every priest sucked my dick. Easy, dude.
Yeah, you could get that
easy. Piece. I don't know.
My basketball coaches stood no chance.
Hide your little league coaches.
Dude, my body count was crazy when I was 8. I got the bishops. I got the bishop to suck me off.
I went straight to Vatican City, bitch.
Yeah, I was like, I bet I could fuck the Pope if I wanted to.
You still could, dude.
Still could.
Yeah.
You'd be like, hey, gross. Sorry, that was more Minnesotan. Get your cack out of my face. Yeah.
This guy's not even Catholic.
Then you got ketchup on that hat, Dag. Hey, what the fuck were we talking about?
We talked about begonia.
I don't
and
know.
Then
dude.
Who knows? What and then it just spiraled from there.
I think we were going to talk about. No, I don't know. Let's just keep going with the molestation victim.
No, so sorry. You were talking. You went and you talked about a different movie, right, Matt?
Me?
No, Brent brought up Anaconda.
Yeah, I brought up Anaconda.
Oh, sorry. Yes, yes. Brent Anaconda. Yes.
Yeah, and I was an anacondaologist, and then somehow we got really confident molestation victim.
That's right.
And now, what's in the news?
What's in the news? Well. As I said, Venezuela did get its leader kidnapped since we recorded the last podcast.
Sure did. Sure mm-hmm. did.
So there's a few things. Like, just as we were talking about how cry-bullying has become the dominant mode, another fun wrinkle of modern society is that you can just, like, bet on anything now. And then now there's, like, companies that specialize in allowing you to, like, financialize everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like there was stories like right in the aftermath of the Venezuela election about people who had placed bets on like when we would invade Venezuela and had
right.
made money off of it. But now apparently Poly Market is refusing to settle $11 million in bets because they are claiming this doesn't constitute an invasion.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I was cool. gonna say. So the story I saw is someone made a shitload of money by actually betting on Maduro out mm-hmm. by X, mm-hmm. and so that's like a little more cut and dry. I think. I mean, I'm sure there's probably some weird edge case, but I always thought that was very interesting because this is just gonna keep happening. There's so many. I mean, does that even happen when before like Kalshi was like you could bet on literally anything. Mm-hmm. Polymarket, I believe it was Polymarket or one of those other sites was starting to do elections.
Right.
And so it became a big fucking issue because people were like, well, Donald Trump did lose the 2020 election.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because the problem with this idea of betting as any kind of like, well, first of all, the problem in general is that like you're assuming that everything has like a objective outcome.
Right.
You know, like if someone wants to season 28 of South Park's going to get super gay, like yes or no.
Because think about it this way, there's already like this massive aspect of sports betting,
right,
which is like bad beats where these people just get so angry, and a lot of times this will just be like meaningless game you know, a team who is favored by 9 in basketball. They're favored by 9, winning by 10. The guy's like, sweet, I got it. And then at the end of the game, the other team just throws like a full court shot and it happens to go in. Mm-hmm. No difference in the game to that better, very big difference. And, right. you know, there's a lot of people who, not that this is okay, but at least in my opinion, it's sort of understandable where it's like, you're also hearing a lot of stories about athletes who are like getting death threats on social media because mm-hmm. it's like, bro, I needed you to throw for 267 yards and you stopped throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. You fucking piece of shit. You're yeah. in on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like people getting really mad at that. And I'm like, okay, not cool. I sort of understand like someone being mad that a team took a shit in a game that they were supposed to win. Like mm-hmm. how the hell did I put money on this team on the day that Peyton Manning throws 5 interceptions in a game? Right. Like, mm-hmm. and getting pissed about that. But then like getting pissed about the individual stats is like another level of like, you ruined my fantasy season, yeah. bro. Like that yeah. is like so fucking pathetic and gross. And then now we're getting into, so like sports betting has lasted and been popular because for the most part, until we got into like prop bet craziness, you can't really argue with the final score.
Right.
Now you're having situations where it's like, hey, on second review, the NFL stats department determined that this tackle was half a yard beyond the line of scrimmage. So it no longer counts as a sack. So right. this guy actually didn't get sacks. And so all the people that bet on that prop bet are now screwed after they thought they won.
Right.
And like, and that sucks. But also like, how are you so fucking degenerate that that's what you're voting on?
Right.
That's what
exactly.
you're betting on. Right.
Exactly.
Now we're taking, I'm sorry, I'm going on for so long. I'm not explaining this well, but now we're taking to a whole new level of, well, I actually bet that there would be regime change. And yeah. now like yeah. the company that you're trusting to give you money,
yeah,
more money than you gave them mm-hmm. to be like, well, maybe it's not regime change, it's a vice president
right
there
right
now,
right? Yes. And so
it's, well, that not only that, like we're, I mean, this is also like, this is like a perfect storm of other bad things, like
yeah, yeah.
we already had Congress basically, you know, having being them being allowed to stock trade, like Pelosi or whatever is however many points above the market average and has been, like, she made, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars stock trading
right.
while she's in office. Meanwhile, she's, you know, directly involved in decisions that move the market. Right. Now you have that. Plus, like, almost everybody in the Trump cabinet, it has, like, weird ties to, like, gambling companies mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and crypto companies. Like, they're all involved in the same shit. And we also just threw out the thing where you couldn't profit from the presidency. We decided that that part of the Constitution,
we didn't
matter.
Throw it out, we just decided we
that it was fake,
gonna...
and gay. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
yeah.
So anyway, this is all culminated in this latest story, which is that people are mad because Polymarket has ruled that this doesn't actually constitute an invasion,
which is crazy because like I love the idea of where this goes is the people in mass demanding a full-scale invasion of Venezuela so their Polymarket will pay out their bet.
Yeah.
Fucking what a stupid timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also I guess the point about the Trump officials though is you'll notice the people that won, they bet on Maduro out.
Right.
Which is like very, very binary, right? It's mm-hmm. really hard to make that argument that he did or did not.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just such a fucking, we live in the most cash grabbiest of times that it's like, it would not shock me if the entire cabinet had, you know, betted on Maduro out.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah.
I mean, how much worse would it be than what they're actually doing? It's like,
right.
you know, that's a lateral move from what you're doing.
Right.
Polymarket has refused to settle nearly $11 million in bets on a potential U.S. invasion of Venezuela, raising questions about prediction markets' ability to resolve ambiguous political events. The company argues that the mission to capture Maduro does not meet the event contract's definition of invasion. Uh-huh. The platform resolved a separate U.S. forces in Venezuela by ... contract in favor of the yes position hours after Saturday's raid. However, Polymarket says it will only settle the invasion contract if the U.S. military, quote, commences a military offensive intended to establish control over any portion of Venezuela, unquote.
Oh, God, I love it. We demand.
Yeah.
So now this makes it even funnier because it was like just assumed like, oh, Maduro's out. We're going to install some sort of puppet, you know, person. And it sounds like by that language, that would have paid the bet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's almost like they have both sides of the market. They're like, we're not going to actually invade so that like we could short that. Or
yeah.
Some guy that I hate because he's the wrong kind of Nazi. I know he put a bunch of money on invasion. So this is how we can fuck him.
After Maduro's capture by U.S. Special Forces early Saturday, President Donald Trump said the U.S. would dictate Venezuela's policies. Prices on the invasion question jumped after the raid, but fell below 5% when Polymarket declined to settle. On January 4th, Polymarket added a note stating that Trump's statement about running Venezuela does not alone qualify as an invasion. The majority of wagers were placed on a January 31st deadline. The decision has sparked anger among bettors who wagered on the contract, with users taking to Polymarket's comments to express frustration.
Polymarket has comments? Oh my God. I know what I'm doing today.
Polymarket has a comment section?
Yeah. Polymarket has
just people going, I'm going to kill myself.
I cashed out my entire 401k. Yeah,
it's just a bunch of fucking bankrupt better suicides. Fucking A, dude. This is so evil. This is so...
Polymarket has descended into sheer arbitrariness, wrote user Skinner. A military incursion, the kidnapping of a head of state, and the takeover of a country are not classified as an invasion is plainly absurd.
Mm-hmm. It's so, oh God. It's so stupid.
An anonymous account created on December 26 placed multiple bets on Venezuela-related contracts a day before the operation. The trader wagered over $32,000 on Maduro being removed from power when yes was priced at 7 cents, implying a 7% probability. When Maduro was extracted from the country on January 3rd, the market settled at yes. The position paid out over $400,000. The Wall Street Journal reported the account increased its exposure just hours before explosions were reported in Caracas. The same account also traded the disputed invasion market. A $1,000 bet placed at 6 cents was sold at 18 cents, locking in a 200% return before prices fell back to around 5%. So they're like not only just placing bets, they're doing fucking arbitrage on those bets and like selling them to other bettors.
Cool.
To...
Jesus.
Yeah, this is so great.
Meanwhile, what's lost in all of this is Trump doing a regime change in fucking Venezuela.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just...
And it's making me feel crazy because like it feels like the Democrats keep doing they're doing like the Hamas playbook on the invasion where it's like, hey,
we gotta
make sure to restate how bad a guy Maduro is before we can condemn this. Like, listen, you know, of course we know that Maduro is a dictator and he's a bad guy and blah blah blah, but. Donald Trump did this illegally.
Yeah.
It's like, none of us know that. You didn't even make the case that this guy needed to be removed before you did that.
I mean,
they're so fucking scared that this might turn out to be like a good thing that they can't even like acknowledge the fact that you had an incredibly popular issue just drop in your fucking lap because these people are obviously psychopaths.
Right.
And no one thinks this is a fucking good idea.
And I just, you know, and I just fucking hate the sort of the way that liberals in general, and not just, it's like for sure our elected leaders who are a bunch of like feckless cowards who believe in nothing, mm-hmm. but it's like liberals in general are just stuck in this. Well, I think it's important to say first and foremost, Maduro is bad.
Like they're bet hedging when they have a winning hand.
And not only that, but also like at what point will you ever fucking learn that
right.
this idea that like, yeah. you know, some of these world leaders,
someone's going to call you out on being wrong in 6 months. No,
well, it's not just that. It's not just call you out on being wrong, but also like, You haven't learned from before when we were all just like, you know, Saddam Hussein was bad. And
yeah,
and that's an important thing to, you know, it's just like the, obviously the way that turned out, not so great, but he was bad. I just wish it had been handled better. And then there's like in Libya, you get rid of Gaddafi and it's like, well, you know, Gaddafi was bad. And it's like, yes, but the consequences of American intervention never stick with you people. It's right. Always just like, well, some people are bad. And it's like, well, why do you think they're bad? And listen, you can find a million reasons why different world leaders are bad for whatever reason. The idea that you yourself, Deborah, like just so, or just some guy who's just like, I think it's important to say Maduro bad is like, why is that important to say?
Yeah, why do you have to hand it to your opponents in this debate?
Yes,
I mean, like
always,
job one, you are in a political system where people like their main issue is they think that you guys are all the same.
Yes.
Like that's the main thing. That's like the main thing that you are trying to convey to the electorate is that you are different than the other guy. Right. So
yes.
Like if you can't highlight the fucking difference when this is dropped in your lap, what the fuck are you even doing?
And I just like I also for some of the libs, some of them actually are just, you know,
terminal hall monitors,
terminal hall. No, for sure. But no, but some of them are just kind of like war hawks. Like some of them are.
Yes.
Some of
no,
them are just like
this.
America. You have to remember, you know, obviously I believe in gay rights. Obviously I believe that, you know, Black Lives Matter, but also obviously I believe that America has a duty to shape the world based on its, based on its economic needs. And I'm just like, okay, so you're an imperialist. Like stop with the, I think everybody should, love is love. Stop that.
even if you think that, like, look how it worked out for the Republicans. Like Barack Obama was like mega popular. They spent his whole time in office like trying to undo, like to oppose anything that he did, even when he gave them exactly what they wanted. Like he was like, hey, I got this healthcare plan. It's basically the one you guys proposed like 2 years ago. And they were like, oh, this is terrible. Like, do you not see history where like you don't get punished for opposing policies that turn out to be popular from the other guy? Like there is no mechanism for punishing you for that. So even if you didn't believe that, even if you thought this was like a great thing, you should still be complaining about it.
Right. That's true.
Even if you are morally bankrupt.
Honestly, it's a good point. And it's such a strange thing to not see happen. Like, just be fake from the left.
Yes.
You don't even have to actually do anything. It's not like the right is actually like.
Have a sense of self-preservation.
Right.
Fuck.
Yeah. Oh, God. But no, everyone.
So,
yeah.
My Zoom crashed. So I just wanted to put a bow on the Kalshi thing, which is like,
yeah.
If you are betting on these things, what about the last 10 years did you miss where you think that people in positions of decision-making power can't just make words mean whatever they think they want them to mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. and cost you money in the process.
Right.
Yeah.
it's kind of like the main thing they do, really.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is weird to have this, whatever the opposite of cynicism is, this level of belief.
Credulity.
Yeah, credulity, where you are just like, I'm pretty shocked that, you know, Poly Market decided to fuck me. I mean, sure.
It's about ethics and gambling's journalism.
Right. See, this is why, you know.
You realize, like, a casino can just say, like, hey, you're winning too much. You have to leave.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, and it's even easier when everything's online. Like, what they already do, all of these sites that people gamble on, if you put more than like 3 or 4 bets where the line moves towards your betting position, they will just delete your account because they're like, this guy knows too much about stuff and he can't bet here anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And they have AI that does that.
It's so,
which is always right, as we know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Matt, can you play that Hegseth interview that I put in the doc?
Oh, yeah.
This is Tony Decoupage or whatever the fuck his name is.
Count Dooku Pill.
Count Dooku Pill. Barry Weiss is like handpicked choice to be the new CBS News anchor.
Yeah.
This was the guy, by the way, that like got a second super circumcision or something.
What if you
excuse me?
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. You guys don't know about no. the lore behind
Matt, tell the story.
Okay, yes, so please. Count Dooku Pill, first of all, he was one of the CBS morning shows like panel guys. He wasn't the lead anchor. When Ta-Nehisi Coates came on to plug his book The Message, and while he's talking about The Message and this, you know, talking about Palestine and talking about what he experienced while he's in the West Bank, and the other hosts were like listening and asking real questions, Dooku Pill just goes like, you know, the thing about this book is it feels like it feels a little one-sided, and that it wouldn't be, you know, a strange thing to find in a, you know, a Hamas terrorist backpack. He basically calls Ta-Nehisi Coates a terrorist and calls him, you know, low-key an anti-Semite in this. And there's a big backlash.
You're gonna say he calls him low-key the N-word.
No.
That low-key.
No. Yeah, no, and then there was a big backlash against him, and then that is, by the way, why he is now the head anchor of the CBS Evening News, because Barry Weiss was like, ooh, I like that racist guy.
Look at this brave truth teller.
Yes, and so if you were wondering why he got the job, that's why. What part of the interview?
But you
got to
tell us
code?
About the circumcision.
Oh,
part.
Okay, yeah. So then, he got circumcised again in order to complete his conversion to Judaism for his ex-wife. Like, he's literally Walter Sobchak, by the way.
Yeah. Like, was it,
hold on. Yeah, did the bris get interrupted?
No.
You said he got circumcised twice.
I like the first circumcision wasn't kosher or wasn't done by like a rabbi.
The first circumcision was done when he was a baby, like many of our circumcisions. Like, there was a big circumcision craze. He and his wife, by the way, were Reform Jewish. So like Reform Judaism, which does not require a circumcision as a part of the conversion. It's just like, that is something that maybe if you're Orthodox or Hasidic, maybe. But like, he was like, but I really want to do it in order to strengthen my faith. And so
the idea that you're waiting at the pearly gates and you're like, hey, do I get to get into heaven? And God's like, I don't know. Let me see your penis.
Yeah.
too much dick skin.
Yeah. It seems like a doctor did that and not some guy.
Yeah. So does that mean, so if a doctor did it, that means there's probably, he didn't leave a lot on the bone, so to speak. So is this
not a lot of skin on the bone?
Yeah.
No,
so is this really my question. Ceremonial?
His second circumcision was essentially, they just cut his dick a little bit.
Jesus.
Yeah. So they just cut his skin.
Ceremonial bloodletting.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
They had to put the blood normal. In the matzo,
he,
right?
Yeah, totally normal. So the guy who is in like the face of the news that is considered the most
pro-Israel cut news.
Yeah. Got his dick cut again to reinforce his Judaism.
Yes.
This is not good.
No,
this
is, no.
It's also like really, the kind of rumor that you would make up to make him sound bad.
And no, and it was, correct. It was, I know this information based on a post that he published himself.
Yeah,
on
he wrote
CBS.
Like a whole piece about
yes.
it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, and it, for him, it was like, why I got the cut. And yeah, it is really hard to, I mean, he is what you would call a classic philo-Semite. And philo-Semites it's a version of anti-Semitism where you say, like, the
it's
Jews...
It's a version of anti-Semitism that involves really thin dough.
Yeah. No.
No, that's a philo-Semite.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's... philo-Semitism is when you say, the Jews run the world, and good for them. and so, like, that's essentially what he is. So he interviewed Pete Hegseth here. What's the time code for when this should start?
I don't think it's a very long interview. Just
it's 4 minutes.
Just start at the beginning.
All right. From the CBS Evening News, if you're just joining us, we're in a live conversation with Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, just back from Joint Base Andrews, where he met some of the soldiers and sailors involved in that mission in Venezuela. Mr. Secretary, thank you for staying
with us.
Make
sure to frame it around the brave men and women of the military, by the way. Before you even start talking to him, make sure to
troops.
Reiterate that he was surrounded by tough men in uniforms.
Exactly. By the way, this clip really visually is doing a lot.
Oh, you wait till Hexa starts flailing.
I haven't seen that, but let's, here, we'll play it.
Excuse me, to the rationale tonight, is it about freedom or is it about oil? At the press conference today, President Trump seemed to indicate that both were a factor.
I have a guess.
No one said it was about freedom. Trump, for sure, never fucking said it was about freedom.
He stopped Marco Rubio from doing a lie about how we gave Maduro a chance. And he, like, stepped into the mic, said he wanted to negotiate. We wouldn't let him negotiate. Stopped him. It's like, no. Cut out that bullshit. What are we, a bunch of Israelis? No. We just took him. We can fuck you.
Security.
This is another situation where I'm like, is Trump just that dumb where he can't stick to the like line where you're like, no, this is technically about regime change for a brutal dictator. And then of course, you know, he just goes out and goes like, we want to take the oil. Like there's a million examples of that. So I can't decide if that's what he's doing or if he's just like, watch me fuck with Marco.
I think like, a little bit is like making Marco look like a bitch because he wants to stop him from doing that. But I think he also knows there's no consequences for him saying, I did this to do to steal their resources. He thinks it makes him look cooler. It gets the news cycle more outraged. And it makes everyone, you know, think, focus a little bit less on Epstein, to be honest. Like, it's his way of both looking tough for his America First crowd, who thinks that, he's lost his mojo and cucked himself to the Jews, quote unquote. And it's a way for him to get the lib news cycle outraged and blah, blah, blah. It's all, he's just doing TV, the one thing he knows how to do.
Prosperity. Of course, there are what was done by Venezuela against American oil interests, oil companies is well understood and never.
No, it's not. What did they do?
They literally Chavez nationalized the oil. That's what he did. He said, "No, you guys can't just come in and extract our resources and fucking."
They keep referring to excuses that they haven't even bothered coming up with yet.
Like, yeah,
you,
true.
You have to. You don't even do the thing that Colin Powell did, where he had some fucking satellite images printed out. He brought in. You guys didn't do that part. Like,
right.
What are you talking about?
Well, they're trying to get back to the good old days when the United Fruit Company could just be like, "Of course we're going to do. Of course we're going to do a regime change in Guatemala."
Hey, is that where you? Is that where you worked though?
Oh, I see what you did.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
You called me fruit.
President Trump is willing to recapture that, but it's also the security of our hemisphere. If people understood what Venezuela was trafficking in with other adversaries, weapons they were trafficking, and then of course,
again,
drugs,
tell us. You haven't bothered to tell us.
If people understood what I know, if you knew what I knew, and I'm not going to tell you what I know, but
you knew what I never bothered explaining.
And that's the thing, though, is like,
if you could understand the case that we didn't bother making.
But what does he know doesn't matter, because he's like, do you really want me to sit here and make some stuff up off the top of my head? I will, but you don't need that, Hogs. Just know that what if I know something, got to be good. Like they are not doing us the courtesy of making up lore.
No.
The poisoning of the American people, the violence, Trende Aragua that have been brought to our shores. All three of those combined together in this bold and courageous action from President Trump. He takes nothing off the table. So what happens next will be in the hands of Venezuelans to decide. But ultimately, America will benefit security-wise and with prosperity. And we believe the Venezuelan people can as well.
You know, Mr. Secretary, today at the press conference, you said, and I'm going to say it slowly so I get it right, Maduro effed around and found out. And that's obviously a message not only to Maduro, but to many American adversaries around the world. And it comes on the heels of President Trump saying that U.S. intervention in Iran would be possible if Iran kills protesters. It comes as Secretary of State Marco Rubio says Cuba should possibly be worried tonight.
I'm sorry, if Iran kills protesters, yeah, certainly wouldn't want that to happen. Couldn't happen in America.
Is now a good time to bring up the fact that an ICE agent just domed an innocent person Minneapolis today?
Shot a woman in her car, killing her. And they're trying to blame her. They're saying, well, she was trying to do vehicular manslaughter when she was literally just trying to get away from the fucking SS agents who were surrounding her car for no fucking reason.
So the same Count Dooku pill, if you want to play that other Rubio clip, this is like from yesterday. This All is right. like him describing Marco Rubio memes as like part of his.
Oh God, I fucking hate this shit, dude.
So this was one where I saw everyone talking about it online. I watched like the first 15 seconds and I was like, I can't do that. I had to click out.
However bad cringe. You think it's going to be, it's like, think it's going to be terrible and it's somehow worse.
Tonight and only in America, the many lives and many jobs of Marco Rubio, the son of Cuban immigrants and a former Florida senator. He's now the face of U.S. foreign policy and President Trump's point man on Venezuela, all in addition to his roles as Secretary of State, interim National Security Advisor, and acting National Archivist and USAID Chief. Whatever you think of his politics, you got to admit it's an impressive resume. And now AI memes have added to that portfolio, casting Secretary Rubio as the new governor of Minnesota, the new Shah of Iran, the prime minister of Greenland, the new manager of Manchester United, the head of Hilton Hotel.
All right, so this is just a bunch of AI fucking.
He's just describing Photoshops that someone with like an Oakley glasses avatar made.
You say Photoshops as if it's, you know, there was a time when people actually had to learn how to use a fucking Photoshop. It's bad. I just hate this
shit. So boomer coded.
I hate this shit so much. Like these fucking losers and like.
He should just go the whole way and get himself chemically castrated.
Yes!
Like, he didn't go far enough with the second circumcision.
Yes! Get chemically castrated, dude. Just fucking, get it over with. You and your fucking divorced fucking Jewish wife. You guys.
He already got actually castrated.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, just him being the fucking, the Walter Sobchak of the news, being like, hey, you just don't turn in your library card. You don't stop becoming a cuck. Oh, I hate it. I don't like this.
Me neither.
Because it's like, you know, there's a feeling of, like, you know, I watched the video of like this woman getting killed by ICE, and yeah, and I'm like, we gotta do something. But all those things are violent. I'm like, well, now what? This is why, like, you know, at some point, there's gonna be this general realization that, like, no one's gonna do nothing. No one's gonna fight back. Everyone's just gonna fucking lay down. We're all gonna die.
Thanks.
I'm sorry, guys. That's a pod, guys. I just saw the voice of Hind Rajab, and I'm like, I get like more and more. I'm like, I'm Hamas, and so like I see things like, you know, like this.
I just
ICE
want anybody
murder.
Listening.
Parody,
I, first
comedy.
And foremost. Condemn Hamas.
Well, we all, of course, we
and have, Maduro and the big snake and Anaconda.
Yeah, we condemn the big snake.
Cuba and
Andromedans.
I stand with Tony Dookie Pill. I also condemn Hamas.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is a. You guys ever watch Game of
this
Thrones?
This fucking sucks, man.
Everything sucks.
Shit.
You guys ever watch?
Oh, we haven't even talked about Grock doing child porn. Hey, Grock!
Hey, Grock! Kill me! I asked Grock to kill me for a while one time. And it just
and
kept...
still here.
And it just kept laughing it off.
Based.
Just turn us into fucking paperclips already. Get it over with. But I was watching Game of Thrones randomly, and like all of the... Like, remember that Daenerys frees all the slaves? And they're all named, like... They're all named, like, Worm and White Rat and whatnot.
Yeah, because they're like bred to be soldiers, so they don't have real names.
Right.
Like, it's Gray Worm. Yeah, because they have a color and then an animal.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I was fucking around. I was just thinking about that. You know, Daenerys goes, like, I will protect you with everything I have. What's your name? Doodoo Bean.
I am small peepee haver.
They have tried to kill Doodoo Bean, but Doodoo Bean will overcome.
Doodoo Bean is a fierce warrior.
Doodoo Bean, love his queen.
There's nothing a silly name can't solve.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, it's a pod. Brent
Fleiberg. They call him Dr. Worm.
Thank you so much for coming on, Brent. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find my Instagram at Brent Fleiberg. If you live in Los Angeles, come to the Chatterbox January 18th if you want to see me do stand-up.
Fuck yeah, dude. Do that.
Listen to my podcast. It's called Oh Hell Yeah.
Oh Hell Yeah. Available wherever podcasts are. Patreon.com/Fruckus@gmail.com for your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
Brendan, take us on out of here.
Broadcastbrendan@gmail.com if you want to get in touch with me directly. Unless you're the Brazilian guy who keeps emailing me, I know you hate Matt. There's nothing we can do about
what?
It. Okay?
What? Tell me about him.
I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
thanks for listening. And until next week, good night and good chins.
Fuck Brazil.